you write everything. I mean, I've said this of you before, but you could rewrite the phone book and I would go, oh, this is more interesting than I thought it would be. You've got a real gift of story. I remember hearing Bob Berg for the first time talk about The Go-Giver, and he mentioned your name and he said, but really truthfully, John David Mann created the story. These were my teachings and everything, but John is the story, and you weave an amazing story. You do that in your parables and now in your novels, and you have a new novel coming out. But I mean, first of all, I hate the question about where do the stories come from, but for you, John, what kind of space do you have to go into in your mind to start weaving a story? Where do you go?
You know, I'm going to get to that circuitously. First, I'm going to say that I was just teaching this to my class last night. The distinctions between fiction and nonfiction are a lot fuzzier than they seem. I mean, there's a lot more overlap. Every great book of nonfiction has a lot of fiction in it, a lot of storytelling. Every great book of fiction has a lot of facts and figures and details and what you'd call nonfiction in it. And I think that great books, fiction, nonfiction, and for that matter, great blog posts, great articles, great anything, they're driven by this impulse to tell stories, to tell stories that resonate with our lives. So what place do I go to? I go to this overstuffed chair in the corner of my room with a blank pad of paper at 5 o'clock in the morning and a pen and a cup of hot tea and try to make my mind as blank as I can, which isn't very blank. Bunch of stuff floating around in there, and say, okay, what do you got? What's up? Are the fish biting? And if so, what are they? I'm ready. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things for me in writing is to escape the gravitational pull of stuff I've already written or stuff I already think or stuff I've already drafted in the book I'm working on right now and just be open to possibilities I hadn't thought of and just kind of let her rip.
Why pen and paper? Does that do something? Does it activate a different part of your mind? Because a lot of people are thinking, well, surely 50 Shades of Grey was written on her BlackBerry phone. And then you've got also, not to compare you, but I'm just saying, there's so much technology. Why does John David Mann retreat to the cave and find a chisel and a stone? That's I find it fascinating.
Yeah. I tried to write a book on some raspberries, but that wasn't the same thing. Chisel and a stone. That's a great question, Chris, because what you said is absolutely what it is. It activates a different part of my brain. I don't know the neurology of it. We could get into right brain and left brain and I don't know, whatever, but here's how it is for me. If I sit down at my laptop, that's great for banging stuff out. We're taking a chunk of, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 1200 words that I've already done and expanding it, editing it, moving stuff around. I write, you know, 90% of what I do, 95% of what I do on my laptop. And I can't fathom these guys like Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, one of my favorite novelists, like his dad, writes books King works on a laptop and on a computer, but Hill writes these books in notebooks with his pen. I can't imagine doing that. I could never write a whole book with a pen. My handwriting is so awful that I can't read what I write myself sometimes. But here's what I do with a pen that I can't seem to do with my fingers and a keyboard the same way, is I catch on to the tail of some wisp of a new idea I hadn't thought of before. I compare it sometimes to trying to coax butterflies to a light in your hand or to put smoke in your pocket. It's like trying to catch this next scene or this next dialogue or this next chapter idea or just this next book idea, trying to kind of catch onto it and get it onto a page. The initial impulse, this I got to do with my hands, like it's a craft, moving a pen in my clumsy way on a piece of paper.
So you and Brandon Webb have written a lot of books together, and your newest is called Blind Fear, and that's what we're here to talk about. But Cold Fear, Steel Fear, these books you're collaborating, co-authoring with Brandon Webb, you've got to be able to channel suddenly going from, you know, nice, mild-mannered, somewhat of a superhero in the literary world, John David Mann, but now you're channeling a Navy SEAL. That's a collaborative process that you didn't see coming, probably, but how is it going now, three novels in?
Most of the best stuff in my life I didn't see coming, and I'm not exaggerating. I didn't see The Go-Giver coming. I thought I was going to be a screenwriter. I didn't see my wife coming. I didn't see, but yeah, you're right. I didn't see this coming at all. But I helped Brandon with his memoir. So I ghost wrote his memoir. It's called The Red Circle. This is over a decade ago. It's the New York Times bestseller list. It's the beginning of a great friendship and great working relationship. But we went on to write more nonfiction. We did some more memoirs of other SEALs he'd known. And in the process of that, I got to know a lot about the world of a Navy SEAL, interviewed a ton of his colleagues and teammates and friends and their families and their siblings and their kids. And it was interesting. It was educational. And then Brandon said, hey, would you like to write a thriller with me? And I was like, whoa. Not only did I not see that coming, I always thought that writing a thriller would be like climbing a mountain. I mean, without oxygen. It was completely daunting to me. And this is not like a false modesty exaggeration thing. I really didn't see it. I said, how the hell do these guys do that? How do they keep all these threads in their brains? And how do they, you know, not, I couldn't imagine creating out of thin air a magnificently complex story, like a 400-page thriller. But a couple of years ago, I sat down and gave it a shot. And God, I love it. I just love it. It is a little bit like Clark Kent and the other guy, because I've written all these books about really lovely people saying and doing really nice things and leaving you with lessons about leadership and success and great human values and stuff. And now I'm chasing serial killers across the tundra of Iceland. And it's pretty different, but I adore it. I adore it because it's such a huge canvas to paint the human condition. You know, it's you ask any crime writer, from Michael Connelly to Lee Child to anybody, what do they love about their novels, about their thrillers, their crime fiction, their mysteries? And it's the people, it's the characters, it's the human drama that you get to really, really go into it in depth.
Where are you taking Finn on this journey called Blind Fear?
So the very first Finn book 2 years ago was set on an aircraft carrier, which is an environment that's so foreign to most people. And you know this, Chris, I spent some time on the Abraham Lincoln, USS Abraham Lincoln. Brandon spent 6 months on that particular carrier, and we set the book there. So the whole book was, you know, part of it was to introduce Finn, this enigmatic character with missing memories and a traumatic past and ends up being a fugitive from the law, actually, the military law. And part of it was the chase of a serial killer, the mystery, the locker room mystery. But also a lot of it was exploring the carrier and introducing the reader to this weird, strange, foreign, alien world. And once we'd done that, we knew that if we were going to do more books in the Finn series, we had to find some fascinating environment in every book, or we'd let the readers down. We'd let ourselves down. We'd let Finn down. So book two was in Iceland, which is a really, really fascinating place, not just geographically, but also sociologically and in every way imaginable. And so for book three, we put Finn in Puerto Rico in the middle of a killer hurricane. And it starts out in the beautiful little paradise island of Vieques off the east coast of Puerto Rico, which is a lovely place to vacation. It's unspoiled. It's just magnificent. And it's got this horrible, ugly past. The U.S. took over Puerto Rico as a territory, you know, over 100 years ago. And then proceeded to bomb the crap out of it. They used, the U.S. Navy used Vieques as literally as target practice, throwing the worst stuff they had, you know, napalm and depleted uranium shells and just like everything for decades. And, you know, there's still stories of elevated cancer levels on the island. And, you know, it's a traumatized place. And the more I got into Puerto Rico and its history and its kind of its status in the world in relation to the U.S. and in relation to the rest of the world, it's just such a fascinating place. In many ways, Puerto Rico is like an abandoned child. And so abandoned children kind of became a theme in the whole book. Finn's own abandoned childhood, and there were two kids, literally children, in the book. Book opens with two kids on the beautiful paradisical beach in Vieques, who all of a sudden face something awfully scary and disappear from the face of the earth. We entered another alien territory. It ends, of course, it culminates in a ferocious hurricane that Finn has to battle single-handedly in a little fishing boat.
It's very Hemingway-esque worthy. That is cool. And I love that.
The young man in the sea.
Yeah, right against the sea. And I love the idea of the character. You talked about the characters and stories, and obviously the USS Abraham Lincoln, Iceland, and now Puerto Rico are characters in your novels, and you do an amazing job of drawing people in. It just draws you in instantly, and you begin to care about things that I never thought I'd care about before. I mean, it's not that I don't care about the Navy, it's just I never thought I'd care about what happens on a carrier, but it is fascinating. And in your books, you have this way of weaving all that together with a really interesting story. It's not cold at all, even though it's called, you know, Cold Fear. It's not cold. It's amazing. And everything you've done with Brandon is laudable. And I hope that people run out and get the book, which is called Blind Fear, obviously, wherever books are available. When's the pub date?
July 18th.
All right. So no matter when you're listening to this, July 18th, 2023, otherwise just get it. And of course, John David Mann is an author. You want people to pre-order this, yeah, right?
Yeah, ideally. It would be wonderful for us. The more people pre-order, the more it kind of boosts the Amazon algorithms, which simply means it gets put in front of more people. Mm-hmm. It gives us the opportunity to show more people our wares, our stories. Obviously, we want as many people to know about these stories as possible. Finn's whole saga, and it is a saga. This is part three, but it ain't done yet, is really, to me, it's a really gripping, engaging story. And everybody I know who's read the books is like, I have got to find out what happens to him next. They care about more about Finn than they practically care about their next door neighbors.
The website is John David Mann, double N, by the way, johndavidmann.com. The man, the myth, the legend, and the best New York Times best-selling author, John David Mann. Thank you so much. And I just encourage everybody to pre-order or order wherever you are in the world right now. Blind Fear by Brandon Webb and John David Mann. Thank you so much for your time, your information, and the work you put into the world.
Thank you, Chris. This is my favorite radio show on the planet.